Welcome to the program for Tuesday, March 20th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every Tuesday in the 3 o'clock hour, we take you inside the executive suite where we talk to people who are thinking and talking and making the most important decisions inside the federal government. And my guests on the program today are some of the most influential thinkers and most experienced people when it comes to technology in the federal government. Former administrators in the Office of E-Government and Information Technology at the Office of Management and Budget, Karen Evans. It's great to see you, as always.
Thank you for having me back.
Always enjoy having you here. And Mark Foreman, nice to see you as well.
Likewise.
Today, we have a lot on the plate, potentially, to discuss. The place I want to start, though, is the place that I hear probably the most conversation about when it comes to IT and government right now, and that's the mobile space. I think we're all maybe sick of hearing about bring your own device and the mobile strategy that OMB is talking about. Our Jason Miller has a story online at federalnewsradio.com about the broadening now of the mobile strategy. And that's where I want to begin. Mark, I'll start with you. When it comes to thinking about a mobile strategy in government, you've been talking about this for a long time. You saw this coming before a lot of other folks did. Does the path that we're on right now look like the path that you envisioned when you first started thinking about it? And if not, how's it different?
Well, it looks to me like there are two paths. You know, the thing that's the only thing that's not like what it was at the turn of the century when everybody said we got to get on the internet is there's no new call for the chief mobility officer, mm-hmm. you know, but I expect that to be coming fairly soon here, somebody to be in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Look, the technology is great. There are companies booming in Android apps and iOS apps, and so there clearly is a very fervent marketplace out there in building these mobility apps. Two things happen in the federal government in situations like this. Number one, people spend a lot of money. They want to go in competition against these companies. They want to build their own apps. You know, I keep hearing an advertisement from a government agency on a radio station that says, look at us, we built this neat app if you're a smoker trying to quit. And you know there are dozens of these applications out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, these are kind of field of dreams. And people in technology and government, I think, intuitively want to be innovative. And they see it a lot easier to be innovative looking out towards the citizenry than looking in towards their agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know that it's a hassle doing this within the agency, but everybody wants to show how cool they are and how much they know the technology. So there's always a sponsor
mm-hmm.
outside of IT for building an app that the commercial world or that the citizens will use. There's just no demand for it from government. The other thing is the reengineering. The use of this technology to really do performance or productivity improvement within the agencies. And there's some of that going on. For me, that's where we're going to see a lot of the fruit of the application of the mobility. You got to figure out which agencies are mobile. Homeland Security, Defense Department, obviously, and there's a lot of work going on there. That's exciting.
Mm-hmm. The best examples that I can think of what you're referring to, and tell me if I'm on the right track, I had Roger Baker on the show last week or the week before talking about healthcare providers at the VA hospitals using tablet computers as they visit patients, as they care for patients. And the other one is the iPads that are replacing the flight books for pilots at various
sure and now that's a couple years old already. I want to see the new neat stuff that they're doing and start to see the productivity improvement. Obviously, you know, as it relates to these flight instruments, if you could knock out a ton of equipment weight wise
mm-hmm.
that improves the fuel efficiency of aircraft and other things. That to me, That's the down and dirty, roll up your shirt sleeves, figure out how to use the technology. Similarly, if it improves quality of healthcare, reduces errors, that's really good. You know, the use of mobile technologies in other parts of DHS, you know, similarly, inspections, you know, but again, the thing to keep in mind with mobile is a lot of what we do in government is desk work. It's
mm-hmm.
paperwork. We haven't re-engineered ourselves out of the paperwork processes. And so where we're going to see the biggest applications are where there's field work or where we are leveraging some of this next generation technology to engineer out the mundane paperwork. Mm-hmm. And that's the transformation. That's when we'll really know it's hitting. When we see people losing their jobs because they're doing work that's no longer needed. I know we don't like to talk about people losing their job in this economy. That's the reality of technology.
What's your take on the landscape of mobile computing in government right now, Karen?
Well, I think that, like Mark said, the technology has really advanced, and I don't think that the concept of having a mobile worker is new. So, for example, when I was with Department of Agriculture, one of the biggest challenges was arming the workforce because they actually had to go out and do these things called chattel checks. And so when you're going out and you're looking, you have to do a site visit. You have to go and see, you know, do they have the things that they say that they have at the farm? Do they have these other things? So now if you have a mobile device, you can actually take a picture, right, and upload what's happening at the farm, and geospatial data can mark exactly the location. So a lot of these things that were really, really labor intensive, I needed to have a lot of people go out and do, you don't have to do anymore because of the mobile technology that's out there. Mm-hmm. So we think about it in healthcare, we think about it in law enforcement, but there are a lot of other programs that are out there. You think about transportation, the bridges, the surveys of the roads, how all those things are done. All of that stuff can be done with mobile technology, and it should be.
Are we headed in the right direction as far as how we govern that, though, on the inside of the agencies? I mean, you don't want to just have somebody take his own iPad and go out and start taking pictures.
Well, you could if you develop the right standards and framework and manage the security around it. Mm-hmm. So you could. So to me, the key thing here is not so much what devices we're using, but how we're allowing people to have access to the networks.
And that's the transitional change that I think we're finally starting to see.
Yes.
Because it seems to me for a long time, the hardware was what people were focused on. And maybe it's just been within the last 6 months to a year, at least my observation is, that agency people have started to say, wait a minute, maybe we're not thinking about this
so
the right way.
So a mobile device now can take the technology of what, you know, we always talked about the HSPD-12 cards, the CAC cards.
Especially you.
Yeah, especially me. This is something that's really important to me. But the mobile devices that are being developed now have a lot of that technology integrated into it. So what difference does it make whether it's a card hanging around my neck or it's a smartphone if I have a two-factor authentication that allows me to come in and then I'm out in the field and it knows who I am based on what I've just now authenticated into the network? That is phenomenal. But our applications are not engineered right now to take advantage of using a lot of the capabilities that are out there for identification management.
What has to happen, Mark, to make that happen both operationally and policy-wise, so the policies are in place to allow the operations part of it to happen?
Well, this has nothing to do with the election, but a change in who's in the administration.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the reality is we have always seen these leaps ahead in the government's use of technology when a new administration comes in. This has nothing to do with what party you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that 4 years is a long time in technology.
Mm-hmm.
People inside the government are working through all the IT buying and the governance regulations around capital investment. And so typically you do the best you can trying to keep up with technology. But then when the next group comes in, they always are more fresh in the business application of that technology.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to do something totally different. Now, you know, there's some problems with that. Like, you know, we've seen where people just assume it wasn't good and lose a lot of time based on their notion that I know what's right and the people before me didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that that's where we see this next leap. And the same thing will probably happen with mobile. As we've got some really good people in government IT now, but you're in the government, you're constrained by the environment. There are people in the commercial world that are going to come in the next administration, whether it's next year or 5 years from now.
Mm-hmm. Mark Forman is in my studio with Karen Evans this afternoon on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, talking about the state of IT and government. We'll continue. Let's flesh out the mobile space a little bit more when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Provided by Insperity.
Hi, I'm Tony Sterling, Vice President of Project Support Services Incorporated, a service-disabled veteran-owned small business. We provide project and contract support services to federal, state, and local government. I wear many hats in my job, as I'm sure most of you do, in small and mid-market companies. In 2008, we had only 46 employees. Now, thanks to Insperity's diverse spectrum of services, we have 156 employees and a true national footprint. One of the keys to our rapid growth is Insperity. They give us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
The Department of Defense update is brought to you by ITT Excellus.
Downsizing troops in active duty forces may be a good thing for the reserves. The Reserve Forces Policy Board is asking Defense Secretary Leon Panetta to highlight reserve service as an option for active duty personnel that leave because of downsizing. Board members say the military's pay and personnel system doesn't make that transition easy now. They're making 8 recommendations to Secretary Panetta to do that. The military has to cut end strength by 5.5% by the end of 2017.
What is the power of ingenuity? It's helping the FAA build the foundation for next gen. It's using satellites so planes fly safer, more efficient routes with fewer delays. It's proposing to change how air traffic controllers and pilots communicate thanks to a unique partnership between airlines and manufacturers to seamlessly introduce digital transmissions. And it all comes from ITT Excellus, a world leader in air traffic management. Visit exelisinc.com. Excellus, the power of ingenuity.
Walk MS. Every step matters, every dollar counts, and every person makes a difference. Hi, this is Sine Simpson from ABC7. Please join me in the movement to end MS forever at Walk MS this April. Support the National Multiple Sclerosis Society and walk to create a world free of MS. Register for one of 6 sites around the D.C. area at msnu.org. That's msandyou.org.
Presented by Booz Allen Hamilton.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. FEMA, not surprisingly, thinks there's a future in emergency management. It wants to get more young people to try it out. So it's created FEMA Corps, modeled after AmeriCorps. Plus, cloud computing is complicated, but the GSA has some new tools to make it a little easier. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests today are Karen Evans and Mark Forman, former eGov administrators, here for the full hour. We talked about mobile in the first segment, folks, and I wanted to go to a point that Mark brought up, actually, before we went on the air, that fits with where we kind of left our conversation, and that's the commoditization of IT. The new iPad is out, and, I mean, if you go to any government event in the next couple of weeks, you're going to see a bunch of those all around. Lots of people have smartphones of one form or another, and they're going out and buying them themselves before the agencies are able to get them for them. We talked about bring your own device before we went on the air as well. All of these things fitting into this conversation about commoditization of IT. Are the agencies structurally able, Karen, to keep up with that at the speed at which it's happening now? Because Apple, it looks like, is putting out a new product every, 18 months or so in both their phones and tablets. And we're going to see just a plethora of devices on the other OSs and so on.
Yes, Apple does, because my daughter is an avid Apple fan. And so we go out and get them every time. So to your question about are the agencies able to do it, they could under some rules because it's a small purchase. So it would qualify as a small purchase depending on how the rules are set up about once you hook to the network and how you do certain things. And that's part of the challenge that CIOs have. But to sit there as a CIO and say, gosh, you can't have the same experience. And this has been around for years. When I was in doing stuff in the 80s coming up, you know, I can do this at home, so why can't I do it here at the office? And the argument back then was, well, there's certain things that the government should be doing. There's certain rules that the government should be doing with government computers or government services. And there's certain things that you do at home that you would never do at the office. And that's how we got around it, or how we rationalized it from that perspective. But the way that things are set up, they could go out there and buy it. The government contracts allow for smartphones and things like that too. What happens is once you bring it in, and then there's the one anomaly, you know, one security breach or one issue, mm-hmm. or one release of all of personally identifiable information in a research database, that then makes the pendulum swing totally the opposite way. And that's the challenge that mm-hmm. the agencies have.
Karen mentioned security, and you've been telling me, Mark, every conversation we've ever had in all the years I've known you, you've talked about the concept of security not being a bolt-on. It's got to be woven into the DNA of whatever it is the government's going to use. And it strikes me that that's the major problem with the whole BYOD movement, is nothing that anybody brings in ahead of time is ready to conform to whatever security structures the government requires. Is that a fair statement on my part?
Well, I think it's a multifaceted security architecture.
That's Thank you for jargoning. The simple answer. Thank you for the simple answer.
So look, as Karen mentioned, I associate my identity. I mean, the cell phone companies associate the identity with that device. Mm-hmm. Apple associates that identity. Once you go to a store and buy something, your identity is associated with that device. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's just not the way government agencies do identity management and access controls. So we have some things that have to adjust as we look at these devices as just a piece of metal commodity transport asset or whatever they want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I'm a big believer in the iCloud concept as the future of how the government should use cloud computing.
Mm-hmm.
And that model says this device, whatever it is, has my identity chit on it. And there are so many emerging ways to do that. The applications and the data have to have those access controls. I probably want that data from that mobile device to get wiped off as soon as I'm done. So that device is not necessarily would have an application living on it,
mm-hmm.
but while I'm connected, I get access to the data and applications I need. Now, you know, the reality is that may fit well for the telephone type devices or the iPod type devices, but not for the iPad,
mm-hmm.
you know, or notepad or notebook type devices, where I do want to be able to do some productivity at that site.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, we've got to provide for all of that in this emerging environment of the cloud architectures. And I don't know that there are enough standards defined yet to work that in, but I contrast that to where most agencies are in essentially still a client-server architecture. And so there's space to go there. And I do like the platform as a service model that says we're going to be building these new applications in a consistent set of architecture standards, which includes security standards. Mm-hmm. I think DoD's got that very well laid out in both RACE and Forge.mil. I know it's hard because contractors are used to working in the client-server environment. That's the way it's been for 20 years. We're going to have to go through a transition. You know, maybe it's going to take rewriting the FAR to get people into understanding a lot of the concepts that are around reuse, standard architectures, use before build, reuse, repurpose, build for scalability, build for identity management.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take a couple years of re-architecting. I think that's what OMB is working on now, and I know there's a lot of impatience with it. But this stuff is not easy. It has to be architected.
Mm-hmm. You're nodding your head in agreement as Mark's saying that.
Well, I'm nodding my head in agreement about the re-architecture piece. I'm not necessarily nodding my head in agreement about the FAR.
Uh-huh.
Okay, because I actually think, and I know people, you're probably going to get blasted with emails over this. I actually think that the FAR allows for a lot of this mm-hmm. to happen. And I really think that given a lot of the groundwork for the policies and the types of things that were there, that a lot of flexibility was built into it to allow for it to deal with adapting technologies. The challenge that you have here is the follow-up or, you know, oh my gosh, should I say this word, enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you say, okay, we're going to build it to share, so you're going to start seeing this with FedRAMP and a couple of these other types of projects and the transitions of what is happening, someone has to follow up and say, aha, you do not conform to what we said we were going to do, or aha, you did not reuse this. It came through FedRAMP, and you are now building your own. Back to your original point about I'd rather build my own field of dreams type of approach.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And somebody's got to say, you can't do that anymore. And now so maybe I was always the bad guy with the stick.
That's what everybody tells me.
And that's what everybody says. But the way to make some of this, if you don't award one contract, right, if they think that even when you read the FedRAMP guidance, it talks about you have 3 years to grandfather in an application. So, people are like, oh, yeah, this too shall pass because this administration will be gone. I call them the weebies. We be here when you be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll try to outlive the policy. And so a lot of this is people are trying to protect the status quo while there's other people that are trying to put in the new changes and bring in new technology and try to change the services. So the ones that are trying to protect the status quo, that's really the big change here. And you can say it's the FAR, you can say it's security, but you got to stop one contract. You got to stop one agency.
The reason I'd say that the FAR is a key part of this is not that it doesn't provide for it, just like many laws provide for it. I think the big gap is the training. We don't have enough people in the procurement shops mm-hmm. that understand this. And, the vernacular of the cloud is service level agreements, service level requirements, it's service levels focused. I believe that's all in the FAR to provide for that. But I believe if you ask most CIOs or most of the folks trying to buy this stuff, there are very few procurement people who have the knowledge that they need. Those who do exist in fewer agencies. There probably aren't 24 people spread across the agencies. And if they were, they'd be so overwhelmed so mm-hmm. fast.
So is it then a policy issue where the FAR should be changed? Or is it, as Karen's saying, more a training and awareness problem that we have?
Yeah. I've seen both. And to be quite honest, I don't know which is right. You could train the people on SLAs and SLRs and the FAR. How's that for acronyms? or you create the need for training.
Mm-hmm.
And my sense in governance, and I think a lot of the research in governance shows that you have to have a crisis. And one way to create a crisis is the FAR is different. if the FAR is different, then all the procurement shops can justify, we got to get our people to training.
Okay.
Even though it may be a cosmetic difference.
So it's not the difference in the FAR itself, it's what that difference generates within the acquisition shops to drive the change that you want to drive.
Or it could just be the arcane nature of government. To get the people to training, you got to create some sort of event.
Karen, before in our little warm-up session, you mentioned a question that transcended IT about how we think about all this. And I want to ask you about that question when we come back from the break. This is In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests are Mark Forman and Karen Evans. Conversation back in just a moment.
If you are facing advanced illness or the end of life of a loved one, peace of mind is in short supply. Fortunately, pain-free comfort care is available from the Washington Home and Community Hospices, a not-for-profit organization with a holistic team of doctors, nurses, caregivers, social workers, chaplains, and volunteers. The team comes to you in your home or wherever you call home in D.C., Montgomery, or Prince George's County. For your peace of mind, call them day or night for a complimentary consultation at 866-234-7777.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formulas.
At Kaiser Permanente, we carefully select our doctors so you can carefully select your doctors. Our hiring process is so selective, only 1 in 10 doctors who apply make the cut. Yes, we're uber picky. Probably have a little perfectionism complex in there, but by putting our doctors under the microscope, we've discovered some of the greatest medical minds in their fields, and that's led to an even greater medical breakthrough. Drumroll, please. Award-winning care. We've received many of the highest possible rankings in member satisfaction, patient safety, overall quality of care, and more. But we're not the only ones reaping the rewards. Because we carefully select our doctors, you have great doctors to choose from. And with all those great doctors, you think it'd be easy. But try choosing just one for your primary care doctor. We'll let you create your own highly selective process for that. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we're here to help you thrive. Visit us at kp.org.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
You wouldn't drive your kids in the car without them wearing seatbelts, would you? So why leave them unprotected when you're gone? Learn about the latest techniques for maximizing your wealth and protecting your assets for your heirs. Join me, Wayne Zell, for Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. I'm an estate planning attorney with Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman. Each week, we talk about how you can realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. That's Blueprint for Wealth, Saturdays at 10 a.m., right here on 1500 AM.
Missing the Screen. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Screening tests can find some kinds of cancer early when treatment is more effective, but a look at national survey data for 2010 indicates a good deal of missed opportunities. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, researcher Mary White.
Not all Americans are getting the recommended screenings for breast, cervical, and colorectal cancers, and disparities continue to persist for certain populations.
Asians had the lowest rates for getting the screenings, but scientists at the CDC and the National Cancer Institute say the screening rates in general indicate that the country has a long way to go to meet federal Healthy People screening targets for 2020. The findings were in CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few. The proud. The Marines.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. One of my favorite hours in the course of doing this show over the last couple of years is to bring in Karen Evans and Mark Foreman. And I just sit back and ask a question every once in a while. I just let you guys hash through all of this stuff. And it's great to see both of you again. Karen, before we went on the air, you asked a question or posed a question that we should be thinking about in terms of IT. And I don't know that I quite get what you were getting at in the short time we had to talk about it. So I want you to expand on it now. You said that we should be thinking about all of these things in the terms of what's the role of government. Now, that's a huge existential question. How does it pertain specifically to the role of some of the things that we're talking about, like IT and or like mobility and data center consolidation and all the cloud computing, all these other things that roll up into the IT conversations that we have?
So in a lot of the areas when I was an operational CIO and we were looking at all the different projects and things that we had, depending on what department I was in, one of the basic questions I would ask is this the right business for us to be in? Is this a service that we should really be providing? So if you take a look, so I'm apologizing to all the interior listeners as they're listening right now. But if you look at Department of Interior, one of the big questions I would ask, like them or agriculture or any of these agencies that have huge data centers that provide services out, right, is are they in the business to provide services to other federal agencies, or is the Department of Interior really in the business to do land preservation, historical preservation of artifacts, looking at our nation's resources and sharing those and preserving those into the future? Is that what the Department of Interior was set up to do, or was Department of Interior set up to do shared services for financial management for other agencies? I mean, those are basic fundamental questions. Did that arise out of a need? Sure. But when we were looking at things like lines of business and, you know, they don't have capital investment accounts and they need to have retained earnings, we used to ask, retained earnings for what? I mean, why are you providing this service for other agencies? And some of the answers that we used to get back was because we just want to control the servers. That is not the right answer.
You're laughing about that, too, as I'm laughing about it, Mark.
Well, look, you know, we've got 50, 60 agency programs doing the same function. Clearly, there's a problem in the way we're provisioning government services. Every program has to have its production capacity. Well, what goes into that?
Mm-hmm.
I got IT and I got people. That's it. You know, I got a building that's a standard building, but that's as commoditized as anything. I got people and technology. And as Congress creates these programs, they always provide for both the people and the technology. Okay. Well, that would be great if government only had one program, but it doesn't. It has thousands of programs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so there are only a couple ways the government delivers its service. And computers only do a couple things. They check data in. They produce a record. They move a record from one file to another. It's insanity to think that every program needs its own set of computers.
Mm-hmm.
So now, in the day of client server, though, that's the way you bought it. Every work group had its productivity tool. That's been gone for 5 years. The implication is the government's about to go through a major restructuring where the way we provide service, and government is a service entity, is as a service-oriented organization. I have to have people who have expertise in that policy area and people who have expertise in the administrative approach I use in that policy area. Some programs are block granted or give grants and the money to states, and the states actually do the interaction with citizens. Federal government does not have the bulk of the interactions with citizens. It's state and local government.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we got the bulk of the money that goes, you know, in the government to citizens, the federal government's not talking to the citizen.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking to the people who are interacting with the citizen. The bulk of the transactions with the federal government are with the business community. And those are data collection, filings for the IRS, and regulatory filings. Okay? So a computer doesn't care if it's collecting an environmental report from a Corps of Engineers interface, an EPA interface, an ag interface, an health and human services, a DHS, dozens of agencies and programs collecting the same type of data. Now, each program, for some reason, wants to be different. They want to collect their own data. That's the bureaucratic politique of how the government is organized. And I think what Karen's getting to is the technology and the structure of service-oriented organizations is moving so far beyond the client-server architectures that insulated these operational silos of government that we're on the cusp of a major restructuring in government. And for me, the crisis that we're seeing is, as GAO reported a couple weeks ago, the tens or hundreds of billions of dollars of redundant programs and operations. Remember, the reason we have redundant programs is because the current program is poor performing. And we don't fix it and we don't kill it. We create another program. Then we go through a round of budget cuts and that program becomes poor performing. Now we got two that are not performing well. So what do? We don't fix the two. We don't pull them together. We create a third program. And as I, you know, have said before, when we looked at this when I was on the Hill in the 90s, it was an average of 6.5 different agencies per policy area doing that program. When we did the eGov strategy in 2001, it was up to 11 or 13. And if you look at the GA reports now, it's up to 50 or 60. This is not a sustainable government.
You said something there that I want to ask you more about when we come back from the break. It's a statement that the cynic in me doesn't necessarily agree with. Mark Forman there and Karen Evans also in studio with me on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. More in a moment.
Meeting mission goals through health, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention plan to spend $54 million on a nationwide anti-tobacco campaign. The graphic messages span TV, radio, billboards, bus signs, and print ads, all designed to get smokers to quit and keep young people from starting. CDC says smoking causes 443,000 preventable deaths every year, but its ad spending will be dwarfed by the marketing budget of the tobacco industry, which spends about $10 billion a year.
General Dynamics IT is meeting the challenges of a complex healthcare environment that requires far-reaching experience and full-spectrum capabilities. Government, military, and commercial health payer organizations rely on General Dynamics IT's health services, solutions, and support to tackle their toughest issues. General Dynamics IT's broad understanding of healthcare data, military health missions, fraud, waste, and abuse protection, and more ensures support and innovation tailored to your real-world needs. Today's healthcare challenges are formidable. To learn more, go to GDIT.com.
Do you know someone who's done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's third annual Causey Awards. Together we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search Causey Award.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbin. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I've never been tag-teamed during a commercial break before. I said to you before we went to break, Mark, that there was something that you said just a moment ago that I'm not sure I agree with, the cynic in me disagrees with, and as soon as we turned all the microphones off, Karen said, well, I agree with you, Mark, so I don't know where he's going with that. So to get hammered from both sides here is a little bit overwhelming. The part that I didn't agree with you about, that I'm not sure I agree with you about, Mark, is when you said that the government is on the cusp of major restructuring. I don't disagree with the concepts that you're talking about, with the changes that maybe should be made. I'm much more skeptical after following this stuff for the period of time that I have, that the agencies will go along with whatever changes they feel are forced on them. And so that we will be sitting in this same conversation 5 years from now, and not much really will have changed in the same process that you talked about. This evolution of duplication will continue just because people are comfortable doing it the way that they're doing it. Culturally, it's much more difficult to change and to do what we need to do to face the reality of the financial situation than it is to just keep going along with whatever it is that we've been doing for however long, no matter how misguided it may be.
Well, full circle on this concept of shared services and Karen's comments about is it appropriate for one agency to cross service another.
Mm-hmm.
I think Vivek was not a fan of the shared services initiatives that we had started. It's pretty clear that OMB and Steve Van Roekel now are in returning to it. They have no choice. We cannot afford, even without sequestration, I think the pressures on the programs would be so strong. And the question really comes back to path of least resistance. Is an agency going to give up programs, or are they going to allow for cross-servicing to get the administrative support so they can own their own programs and own their importance in the world?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand where you come from, and this is a cynic, because I think the binding constraint that is keeping the government from improving its organization structure is the appropriations process and the appropriations committees. And it's nothing wrong. It's no, it's not poor actions by the members. The incentive structure in the way that's organized is to make sure that you've got a program that supports your constituents, satisfies your constituents. And the way that what's come out of that is this tremendously redundant bureaucratic mess
mm-hmm.
that is unaffordable. So I don't see any light unless somebody that understands this comes in as head of the Appropriations Committee and restructures how they do their work.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, I don't see that. But I do see the use of shared services and the emphasis that OMB is putting on that. I do see the folks there understanding that they have pretty much no choice but to go back to the stuff that Karen and I were working on around figuring out common administrative actions, what we call lines of business and common programs, lines of business, and move to a cross-servicing approach. Now, how that gets structured, whether it's a stronger GSA or whatever, is up for debate. But I don't think we can afford each program to have its own client-server architecture like we did before.
Mm-hmm. Mark talks about the congressional element of this, and that's part of where I get my cynicism, I suppose. And I don't see any of that changing anytime soon. I mean, we see it with the data center consolidation issue. I've heard stories of CIOs being told by members of Congress, you can't close that data center because it's in my district and it's X number of jobs.
And that's true. And so as long as we continue to have this issue, obviously, of unemployment, huge economic burden on the society as a whole, that is Congress's role, right? So this is very different than when they start saying, oh, it's like a board of directors mm-hmm. with a 535, directors. But the board of directors has one goal in mind when it's working in industry, and that's to make the company profitable. In this particular case, there's 535 different goals that you're trying to achieve,
mm-hmm.
and because we have a representative government. So they have to have what is best for my representative, And so to close down a data center, all politics are local, and that's where it happens. So you see that in the local press, and if I'm the one who is responsible for voting to close down the data center, I might not be back in a job. Now, there are some people, thus the Tea Party and everything else that came about, saying that that's not a bad thing. Right? That I go to Congress, I do what I said I was going to do, I'm going to help reduce the deficit, and I'm not going to become a career politician.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go back home. So you know, maybe I'm the internal optimist here, is that I think that you are seeing a change in some of the members that are up on the Hill, because ultimately they have the same goal as the president, and that is, how do we do this best for the American people? We may not necessarily agree on what all the tools are, but they are saying, how do we provide these government services in the best way for our citizens at, you know, the most effective way at the least cost?
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it's about. So you're maximizing taxpayers' dollars here. I don't mind giving another dollar if I know it's going to benefit education.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind paying more taxes if I know that it's being used efficiently. Right now, that's not the case.
Yeah, but I think that the breakdown continues to be in the appropriations committees.
Sure.
And especially when somebody gets on the committee, which now means now you have a program to provide for your constituents.
Mm-hmm.
Your constituents come to you with a problem and you want to service them. It just so happens it's not on the subcommittee that you are co-chairing or chairing, right? So what do you do? You know, maybe at some point in the old days, you went to the member that was chairing that and you did horse trading.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't seem to exist anymore. So what you do today is you create a program in an agency that's under your jurisdiction. And it's not like this is once or twice. When it's happening 50 times,
mm-hmm.
That's a real problem. Now, the other aspect of this is who's accountable or who's responsible for looking at the performance relative to cost of programs. And I think one of the things that I'm hoping comes forward out of this, to be on the optimistic side with Karen, I think the budget committees have a tremendous role and opportunity. And I think there are members coming on that. I think Paul Ryan, Mark Warner from Virginia, having Marcus Peacock on the Senate side as a staff director, where you have people know their relationship, and Austin Smythe on the House side, between performance and expenditures. And they can look not just at a program level, but in a budgetary level.
Mm-hmm.
Now we start to have the capacity to optimize.
We've got to take one more break before we wrap up the conversation this afternoon with Mark Forman and Karen Evans on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Where this all converges is with the end user. And the end user, having a tablet kind of a device or a smartphone, needs to have access to any of those types of applications. They don't care where they're running. They just know that from their immediate device, they need to have it and they need the result quickly. And this is where the Federated Identity Management interacts with the application and the data fabric, which interacts with the cloud-based infrastructure, and it all comes together to provide that high-performance, real-time, agile, and secure capability for the end user."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Just a few minutes left with Karen Evans and Mark Forman today. And one of the things that each of you does so well when you're here with me is you leave me a couple of things to think about till the next time we're able to get together. Mark, what should I kind of keep in the back of my mind? Maybe what are some markers that I should be looking for as things progress in government over the next 3 to 6 months? Or what are some things that are kind of long view on the horizon that aren't getting a lot of attention that are on your mind?
Sequestration. In order to have 9% cuts starting in October, those cut decisions have to be made at the beginning of the summer and implemented on October 1.
Mm-hmm.
If they aren't implemented until 2 or 3 months later, those 9% cuts become 12, 15% cuts. Now, agencies are not going to cut the benefits to the citizens if they're benefits programs. They may cut or they may threaten to cut if Congress debates this year, reversing sequestration. But if sequestration holds, and I think it will, because that's a path of least resistance, nobody has to make the tough choices if the pain gets spread equitably. And that's the way Congress seems to like to do deficit reductions. That's what sequestration is about. So that I would watch that because I think the IT industry is going to bear a lot more than 9% cuts, and that's going to have huge implications. That's a crisis.
About a minute and a half left. What do you think we should be paying attention to?
So I agree with that. So we'll kind of flip it around a little bit about where I would then focus.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that what everybody does agree upon is that the government provides services, information, and one of the biggest areas of potential growth, and this is what you're seeing, everybody, is that if you can differentiate yourself by providing assured services, and so I'm not using cybersecurity, but I'm saying assured services, minimizing the risk, that you add that value added so that you can rely on your service from that perspective,
mm-hmm.
that's going to be the market differentiator. Because what you used to pay for before, it's going to become basic value, and that's how the market's going to shake out.